This one goes out to my wife and daughters in the audience right now. Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 the flame went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire. Lucky bastard.
That is Joe Buck on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon 8 days ago. He was on the show promoting his autobiography, which is called Lucky Bastard, and he's here now to talk to us about it as well. Hi, Joe. How are you?
That's the first time I've heard that since I did it, and I heard one awfully flat note in there. That was painful to listen to.
But you made it your own.
But I owned it. Yes. It was mine.
It picks up a little bit when the roots come in, doesn't it?
It does, and I gotta say, you know, for as great as they are, they were a little off when they came in, and I don't think they really knew when to jump in or what to do.
You're so blaming the band.
Well, I'm blaming the band.
You know what they did, Joe? They went in the key of G. You were in
I was in the key of M.
Of L. It sounded like L.
Yeah.
Dan's a musician. He knows the difference between L and M.
Yeah.
Why,
well,
Joe?
Thanks for making me cringe as I sit here in the snow in Minneapolis.
Well, we had to sit through it, so why is the question. Why are you singing on TV, Joe?
Why not? Why the hell not? It was actually a reference to when I was on there in 2011, which was during a time when my voice was gone. I was dealing with a paralyzed vocal cord. Mm-hmm. And when I did the pre-interview, the producer said, well, you know, why don't we let you try to sing it in full voice this time? So it was kind of, even if nobody was waiting for it or desiring it, it was my opportunity to make good on a previous failed assignment.
All right. I'll leave it alone. We'll move on to other stuff here. I looked at your Twitter page this morning, and I see that you have yourself referred to as, I love all teams except yours.
Yes. I feel like that covers every team.
Is there a team you have not been accused of being biased against?
No, and I think that's the ultimate compliment. I mean, it stinks on one hand because, you know, when I'm doing the games nationally on Fox, I don't have a home team. Mm-hmm. I guess my only home team is Fox and the guy I'm working with in the booth. So, you know, it's an easy thing, and I think it's an easy thing to understand. And I think I really came to this moment of zen during the NHL playoffs last year when the Blues made it to the conference finals. And on TV, it was either Kenny Albert, who's a great friend of mine and who does a brilliant job doing hockey, or Doc Emrick, who's phenomenal and multiple Emmy winner and all that. But when the games are the most insane and intense and mean the most, I want to hear the local guy that I've been listening to all year do the game.
Yeah.
And it's no different in baseball. So, you know, it's not personal. It's really not a huge deal.
You know, I remember there was a time when the networks would have, during World Series time, they would have the local announcer from the host city on as part of the three-man booth. I remember, like, the Lindsey Nelson, the Mets announcer, or Ernie Harwell, the Tigers announcer, or maybe your dad even got to do one of these for the Cardinals in the 60s. Did that ever happen?
I don't know that it happened with my dad, but you're exactly right. You know, Marty Brenneman with the Reds in the 70s against the Red Sox, and the Red Sox guy would come in there. And I think there's something to it. I think there's value in it because people want the familiar voice. And when you are in my position, you know, take this last World Series, for example. I'm yelling and screaming when the Indians second baseman hits a home run, Jason Kipnis, and the Cub fans think I don't like their team. And then their guy hits a home run, and I'm yelling and screaming for Chris Bryant. And then the Indians fans think I don't like their team. And really, the real guilt in all of it for me is I'm only rooting for seven games, and that's what I'm always hoping for. That's what we all got, and you know, the ratings showed that it was something that cut through, and I'm sure even the casual sports fan wanted to take a peek and see what was going on with the Cubs and the Indians.
When you say in a World Series game, we're going to extra innings, can you hear the Fox executives counting the money?
Oh, my God, yeah. And every time there's a pitching change and we've got a our financial guy is usually not too far away from the center field camera shot. And I see a little smile creep onto his face every time we have a pitching change. That's just that's we're in the business of trying to make some of the money back from the money they pay out for the rights. And when you get a World Series like that, you got to try to squeeze every drop out of it.
So just to go back to the bias thing for just a second here, how hard was it for you, a St. Louisan who grew up in the booth with your dad at Busch Stadium and actually worked there many, many times, how hard was it for you to say, the Cubs win the World Series?
Not at all. I mean, nor would it have been hard for my dad to say it. You know, I think he, at his core, was a baseball fan and a fan of sports, as am I. And so I get it, Cardinal fans, Cub fans, and the rivalry and all that. But, I tend to take a little broader view of things when it comes to my job and to games like that. And the rivalry is fantastic. It's great for sports. Same with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Those are the two best, Dodgers, Giants. Those are the three real ones in baseball. But you know, I don't think like that. It's one of the reasons why I wrote the book that I wrote, and something that kind of left me when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, because I got a peek behind the curtain, and I know how these guys think. They don't think that way either.
Hey, Joe, you should have called me. I'd have come out and helped you broadcast. I would have had a Indy 48 back with me and sat down right next to you in the booth.
Which brings me to my next question. What is the most number of beers you saw Mike Shannon have in the booth?
I swear to you on my children's lives, that is just Mike. That is not Mike drinking. That is not him doing anything other than being Mike. And you can hear him say the stuff that he says that's crazy sometimes and makes him so lovable at 8 a.m. or at 9 p.m. It doesn't matter where he's been prior to saying something. He's just that way. That's what makes him great.
Let me get verification. Mike, is it true that you've never had a frosty cold one in the booth?
I plead the fifth. I go with Mark McGwire on this one.
Joe, oh, that's great.
Joe, what is different about being a broadcaster, NFL or Major League Baseball or anything else you do? What's different technically about doing the job compared to 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Well, technically, there are a lot more moving parts now. I mean, I think as time has gone on, you go back to the old, the first days, one camera, maybe two, and the play-by-play announcer is doing the, well, there's a ground ball to short. Picked it up, throws first, and that'll do it. Yep. Two out.
I mean, who is that?
There's no light. And now, if something goes on that's crazy, I mean, I remember in this last U.S. Open, we were reading tweets by other tour players on the air about a ruling against Dustin Johnson. So, I mean, there's, the music and the mics and the basses and interviewing the manager from the dugout while you sit in the booth. There's so many different pieces to it. It really doesn't even compare to when I started in 1996. I mean, it's a much more involved, complicated broadcast, but the truth of it all is, no matter how many bells and whistles you add on, if the games are no good, nobody's going to watch. If the matchup is unappealing, nobody cares. And this year, the matchup was appealing and people cared.
Yeah, we had Kurt Menefee on the show last week talking about his new book, and I asked him about the phrase milk games, and he explained, yeah, those are the ones that, like milk, only go to 2% of the country. And those are the ones that are really, really hard to do. Okay, we've got the Buccaneers and the Jaguars this week.
Yeah, but then every once in a while, and I remember when I started at Fox in 94, you go into that game, and then the other game that was supposed to be great sucks, or it ends early, and then all of a sudden they switch everybody to your game.
Yeah.
And you better be ready. So, you cannot make that mistake. And I haven't. I've poured as much work into a game like that as anything else. But, yeah, I get it. But watch out, that's a trap.
Yeah, just to go back to the technical side of this, because I'm fascinated by process in any job. I love learning about these things. And you were there in the Busch Stadium broadcast booth with your dad when you were just a kid. And I'm curious what you learned watching your dad doing the job as opposed to just listening to him doing the job.
Yeah, it was the greatest broadcast school I could ever go to. And when he was doing the radio, you know, that's to the other end of the spectrum. That's a radio engineer who turns on your microphone, and you guys know, you just go.
Yep.
And there's no producer, there's no director. What you see is what you talk about. So you can talk about the uniform on the pitcher, you can talk about who's warming up in the bullpen, you can talk about the popcorn vendor, whatever it was. But when I sat in that third seat, I had a half headset on, and I could listen to the mix of the radio broadcast in my ear, and I could watch his process and watch he and Mike interact and tap one another when somebody had something to say. So I don't even know what you would compare it to. You talk about a peek behind the curtain. That's it.
Yeah.
That's watching the sausage get made. And that's listening to the product that comes over the radio in one ear, but watching what goes into it, the total behind-the-scenes look as it's going on. I mean, it was the greatest education anybody could get, and it's why I was, I guess, semi-ready for it when I did it full-time at 21 years old.
Yeah, I remember a long time ago, my dad came in. I was then doing a morning show, and he came in, and I was running the board for myself in those days, and I had a partner on the air, and you know, there was always stuff going on, and my dad had only heard me through the radio. He'd never seen me doing the show, and during a commercial break, he said, "Oh my God, you're like an airline pilot in here. You're moving, you're touching, you're doing, you're pushing buttons, you're adding this, you're adding that, you're figuring out what you're going to do in the next 8 seconds on the fly."
Yeah, and for TV, you know, people freak out when they put on a headset and they can hear somebody talking to me in my ear while I'm talking
yeah.
into the microphone, or counting me down to a commercial break and saying 5, 4, 3, and by the time he gets to 1, I've got to finish my thought and be clean, otherwise I'm going to get clipped going into a commercial break. So you just start developing other parts of your, you know, in your case, running a board, your dexterity and your hand-eye coordination are like an entirely different track in your mind of, you know, how to decipher what somebody's telling you while you're actually describing something out loud into a microphone in a pressure situation. That's what makes it really interesting.
Did you ever have an Albert Brooks sweating so much it's noticeable moment on the air?
My first TV game with the Cardinals, I was doing play-by-play, and I got called up, in essence, like a player from AAA, and they said, you know, okay, well, it's a doubleheader. When we come on the air at 6, wherever we are, you're going to talk about the first game and set up the second game. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I came on the air. We came on the air at 6. The first game was just ending. I had cake makeup all over my face because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. It was 140 degrees in the booth at Shea Stadium, and I just started to pour sweat. So much so that the earpiece that was in my ear that the truck was telling me what I was supposed to do next popped out of my ear and fell on the floor. So they're telling me that Al Hrabowski can't find his microphone down on the field. I'm throwing it to Al, and they're telling me in my ear, which is on the ground, don't throw it to Al because he can't find his microphone. And I know from the Brady Bunch that when that red light's on, the camera's on, and I'm on TV, and I'm just sitting there sweating. It was the worst experience. And yet, after that, the game started, and I was like, well, I got that worst moment of my life out of the way. Now I can just do the game. So it was kind of a blessing.
All right. While we're talking about worst moments on the air, again, a radio TV comparison. I started out in Top 40 radio where the songs were all 3 minutes and 15 seconds. And you do a 5-hour shift, and the biology of the human body at some point says, you're going to have to leave this room and go to another room with some porcelain in it and take care of business.
Right.
But you only have 3 minutes and 15 seconds. It was different later when I got to playing longer records. But when you can only do it in 3 minutes and 15 seconds, good news, The bathroom's right outside the studio. Have you been in a ballpark where you're on the air and a baseball and football game, you're in there for the whole 3+ hours of the broadcast where your body sent you that same signal?
Yeah, and, you know, I guess for you it's too bad Stairway to Heaven or Freebird wasn't top 40 radio. And for me, we were running out of breaks. It was my first year in the booth, 94, and it might have been 95 my second year, and time is just dragging, and I'm having to go to the bathroom so bad, and it's the bathroom at Old Milwaukee County Stadium where the Packers played one game. Was nowhere near the broadcast booth. So it was like a full 3 minutes just to get there and back. And they're like, we've only got 30-second breaks left. We're out of commercials. And I'm dying. So, yeah, I had to kick this young lady out of the booth. I said, you're going to have to leave. And then somebody handed me a water bottle, which I knocked away. There was no chance of firing it into there. And they brought me a trash can with a plastic bag inside of it. And the commercial hit, and I couldn't go. And then finally...
Wait a minute. You mean you had shy bladder right then and there?
I had stage fright.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then maybe 5 seconds left in the commercial, 10 seconds left, finally... relief, but then they went back to action, and I actually called a touchdown in the NFL while taking care of business in the scratch.
Did you go back and check the tape to see if you could hear it?
Yeah. No, I really pulled it off. It's literally the greatest physical accomplishment of my life that you would never have known.
Wow.
Yeah, somehow I got through that, and no spills either.
that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah,
I've heard and seen you doing some this fake play-by-play on this Fox Series pitch about the first woman to make it into the majors as a pitcher. Jenny Baker is her name, and the actress who plays her is terrific. And I actually like the series a lot. Do you think that we're anywhere closer to a woman getting into the majors than we were 15, 20, 30 years ago?
Well, I say that because I am the father of two really determined young women at 20 and 17. And I think the message is finally out there that if you think you can do it, and you put your mind and efforts toward it, you can do it. And I like the idea of the show because, to me, it's believable. This girl, Jenny Baker, is a change-up artist and throws kind of a screwball. Yeah. And so it's not power pitching. They're not trying to sell you that that she's throwing 105 miles an hour like Aroldis Chapman. She's not overpowering anybody, but she's effective, and she's good at what she does, and you know the wrinkles that even happen in the first episode of the series are great. But yeah, I think so, and I hope so. I mean, it would be phenomenal for Major League Baseball if that ever came to pass, and I think the idea and the success of the show points to that if a female ever got to that level, it would be groundbreaking and really something that people would want to couldn't get enough of if it happened.
Are there women who are doing that at college baseball level, or are they all?
You know, I don't know.
I think too many of them get pushed into softball.
I should talk to the producers. I would imagine the producers have researched this to the point where they would know the answer to that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I would not bet against it, and I'm sure that somewhere that is going on. And man, if that's the case, Major League Baseball should invest in something to try to make that come to pass. I think it'd be great.
They tried it in hockey once with Manon Riom.
That's right, the goaltender.
Yeah.
No, it's fascinating, and hopefully the next step.
Joe is going to be doing a book signing for his autobiography, which is called Lucky Bastard, subtitled My Life, My Dad, and the Things I'm Not Allowed to Say on TV, at the Deerbergs in DePere. on Thursday, December 1st from 5:30 until 7:30. And even more importantly, he'll be back on this radio station in the studio on Monday on the John Carney Show. You're flying back from the Vikings game to do Carney Show on Monday?
Yeah, if I can get out of the Arctic blast. I mean, it's been, I think it was in the 60s here yesterday, like it's been everywhere else.
Yeah.
Now it's windy and they're expecting 2 inches of snow.
No, it was 80 here yesterday, 82 or 83. We broke a record.
Unbelievable.
And then tonight, supposed to be in the 30s, and then tomorrow in the 20s.
On the other hand, it's fun to do a snow bowl, or do they still have a dome up there?
Well, they just built a new, the last 2 years have been playing in the University of Minnesota, which is outdoor, but they just built a new stadium that I've never seen, so I can't wait to get in there. It's U.S. Bank Stadium, and I'm a U.S. Bank customer, so.
Ooh,
I better get like an extra mint or something at my seat.
Nice endorsement there, Joe.
Yeah, well, I won't get anything for it. Well, I hope I can endorse all I want.
From one broadcaster to another, I hope that at the new stadium they've at least put the bathrooms closer to the booth.
I hope there's one in the booth.
Always a pleasure, Joe. Thanks for your time today.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Joe Buck here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.